This edition of the ACAP Coffee Break podcast is supported by Claris Health. Claris Health is a solution-oriented partner who understands where the payment integrity industry is headed next. Claris Health's Perio is the industry's only enterprise AI-enabled payment integrity platform that maximizes health plan avoidance and recoveries at the most optimized cost. With all of your claims over payment processes, analytics, and insights at your fingertips, what goals could you reach? Find out more by visiting clarishealth.com today. Now, let's get back to the coffee break. Welcome back to the ACAP Coffee Break, a podcast from the Association for Community Affiliated Plans. Today, we'll hear from Chiquita Brooks-Lesher, administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Following is an excerpt from the administrator's discussion with ACAP CEO Meg Murray and guests at ACAP's 2023 CEO Summit in Washington, D.C. Here's Meg.
When I do our ACAP podcast, I always start out by asking, why healthcare? And our paths, Chiquita and my path, crossed when we were both analysts at OMB, so we were both interested in it from an early stage of our careers. But what brought you to OMB, I guess, to work on the healthcare there?
Well, it started when I was in grad school, and I was very focused on social issues. I took a class with Judy Fader and Mark Nadal, who worked for GAO, and I became really engaged in working for the government in that class. And Judy convinced me that healthcare is where I needed to be. And if any of you know Judy, you don't say no to Judy. So I started, really focused on really having a heart for the uninsured. I started with the CHIP program, which I think is a fundamental, just a foundation, just really wanting more than anything to see in this country us to make sure that every child was covered. And then very soon after my time at OMB, after I was there September 11th, and really focused on how do we give coverage to people who were dislocated workers. And that really started early in my career, a real focus on wanting to make sure that we had transitions for people and that we addressed the uninsured. And that's really been the arc of my career, of really wanting to make sure that whatever the coverage looked like, that people had access to care.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's actually a great segue to my first question about unwinding. Mm-hmm. And what are you seeing so far? What are your concerns? And especially, are you seeing that certain populations, given your and our concerns about equity, are being more impacted by the unwinding than others?
I think, and I don't have to tell the people in this room this, it is always a challenge to when we look at the when we look at transitions. I mean, before we've been through this period of time, the transitions, when we looked at the CHIP program, whenever there were additional requirements, it would affect whether kids would get enrolled. People's lives change very much at all income levels, of course, but particularly for those who are modest income people, their lives change very rapidly because they're juggling multiple jobs, they move, their incomes can fluctuate between 250% of poverty around there. The fluctuations are just enormous in terms of the swings. And that's just to say how challenging it always is when people go through a redetermination process. And so we knew that this would be a very difficult difficult transition because we've gone through 3 years of not doing Medicaid and CHIP renewals. Millions of people would lose coverage during the redetermination process. And so what we're seeing now is really a variation across the states. States are approaching it differently. And some states have been focused on people that they think are not eligible, and so their numbers may be looking very high because they knew many of those individuals were not going to be eligible anymore. Other states are really approaching it very differently. What we're focused on, we released a fact sheet earlier this week to really try to give a sense of this is what we're seeing so far. What we are engaged in right now is really working with every specific state to understand and monitor what is happening on the ground. I think the things we're learning are how many touches people need. I spoke to one plan, I think you were in this meeting with me, where we heard how people often need 10 touches before they know that they need to do something. And I think because there is just so much variation across the nation, it's been harder to get just some of the messages out about what you all need to do to stay enrolled. So it's an area of real focus. I think what we're seeing is there's just more that we all collectively need to do, and we're trying to think about how do we continue to work with trusted partners. Certainly health plans are key, and we again know how much you've already been doing. This is going to be something that we're all going to have to be engaged in for the next year.
Yes, and our plans have been sharing their experiences with each other, and we met with Dan Tsai yesterday to talk about that and hear from him. As you know, our plans aren't just in Medicaid. They're in Medicare as well with DSNPs, and we were very concerned about the recent risk adjustment changes to Medicare Advantage. So we appreciated that you phased it in, and we want to thank you for that. But as with many things with DSNPs versus regular MA, the DSNPs, there's different aspects of that which make it more challenging. And so are you all going to be looking at the impact on DSNPs? And are you open to thinking if it turns out it is disparate impact on DSNPs?
We definitely, we always look very much as we're making our policy as how it's affecting different plans. And really, of course, being focused on our underserved population, which of course dual eligibles are. We are certainly open and will continue to be. I think we also are seeing things that we are concerned about. And so from my perspective, it's not just about what are we doing in risk adjustment. You're seeing from us really wanting to understand more about how people are getting care. And that's been a real area of focus for us as well, because we see just real variation among the plans in terms of what kind of benefits they're offering. And we're really focused on making sure that as we're paying, people are getting the care that they need, that we're evaluating whether they're doing better based on the kind of care that they're giving in plans. So that's also a very important, from my perspective, piece to thinking about how we're thinking about payment in Medicare Advantage.
Okay. Well, we will be monitoring it on our side, and we'll get back to you if we continue to have the concerns we did initially. But again, we appreciate the phase in. So our plans are not only in Medicaid, Medicare, but the marketplace. We serve all three M's. And in the marketplace, I think as most people here know, we had led the charge against the Trump administration's regulations related to the short-term limited duration plans. And so we were appreciative that the president, one of his first things he did, he said, we're going to change that. Mm-hmm. And we're still waiting for the reg. And, you know, Heather always says I have to ask the question, when is it going to come? And I know the answer is soon. but what I really wanted to talk about was the implications of having these short-term limited plans out there during open enrollment, and especially during redetermination. And so as we know that in some states, 80% of people that, you know, were potentially falling off, and we're afraid that some of them will fall into these junk insurance plans. So is there a thought about further enforcement of them? And I'm not going to ask you how soon the reg, because I know you'll say soon. but that is a concern for us that if they're out there while this process is going on.
And we share that concern and realize that it's even more heightened, which as people are making these transitions. So it remains a priority of the administration. It's been just amazing how many things we've, over the last 2 years, had to tackle and new authorities that we've been given, which is the answer that I will give to why, even though it's been such a priority, it hasn't been out. Yet, but it is absolutely a priority for us, A, to make sure that we're making sure that people are getting in comprehensive coverage, and that particularly, you are right, that during this period of time, it's an additional challenge.
And then my last question before I open it up to the audience goes back to the reg that you mentioned, the Medicaid, Medicare reg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our plans, of course, also are supportive of strong network adequacy requirements, but also cognizant of the workforce issues, mm-hmm. and concerned about being held to a standard that that may be impossible to meet in some cases. And I just wondered how you thought about the workforce issues. And we hope that we're not being set up to fail, mm-hmm. because of the issues that we really can't control in the workforce.
Absolutely. And as always, it's a proposed rule. And so we're going to get comments and know that it will be very important for us to take into account what stakeholders are saying about the about the realities on the ground. I think earlier today I was on with colleagues from my counterparts from CDC and HRSA, and we were talking about workforce, and we certainly in the administration recognize that we have workforce challenges across the nation, and it's not the same in every area, but we know that in a lot of areas of the country it's a significant challenge, particularly in home and community-based service providers, nursing homes, et cetera. So it's something we are aware of, and we will absolutely take your input in as we think about where we end up in the final rule.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, thank you. All right, so I'm gonna open it up to questions from the audience.
Good afternoon, Administrator. Mike Cheek with the Special Needs Plan Alliance. Housing insecurity is a big issue for duals and the DSNPs we represent. And it's been great to see CMS take that on in the Medicaid 1115 waivers that provide 6 months of transitional housing costs. And I wondered if under the innovation pillar of the strategic vision plan, if you thought about how SNPs could get involved with affordable housing and ensuring people can stay in their housing by integrating supplemental benefits with what affordable housing might offer to those individuals, particularly, of course, duals. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you so much for the question. I think we've all, so many people have already known it, but we have all over the last couple of years, I think, really appreciated how much there are the ancillary pieces that affect health. So whether it's housing, whether it's climate, just all of these issues are related. And I would say that we, certainly in the Medicaid space, have been open to state proposals around these ancillary services that are really related and integrated with health. And we are certainly thinking about that in terms of our Innovation Center Authority. This is something that Liz Fowler and Medicare more broadly, as we think particularly about the accountable care organizations and ACOs, how do we make sure that we incorporate some of these additional services? That's certainly one way. And then more broadly in Medicare Advantage, it's certainly a place that we continue to think about what are things. And that's a little bit, not a little bit of, as I alluded to, we are really trying to think and better understand what kind of services are being offered when we think about our plans, and what flexibility makes sense for us to be giving if additional flexibility is warranted.
I had a question about expansion. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of plans in Texas, and what would your advice be to those plans that are in states that haven't expanded to try to push it over?
Yeah, so we all know that this is now very much expansion is a state decision. I will say that in particular, as I visit hospitals across this country, there is a very stark difference between some of the hospitals who are in states that have expanded versus those who have not. And back to your question about workforce and making sure that we have the healthcare system that we need, I think that expansion is a big piece of that, of our providers getting paid for all of the people who need care. So I would say as you continue to work with states, we've seen a couple of states that it has taken them many, many years to expand, but we've gotten over the hump. I happen to be there the day that Oklahoma expanded coverage and was with stakeholders who had worked for a decade to get the state to expand. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful to be with them, to see how much work they had put in, how hard they had worked, but that they had gotten over the hump. And I think that we all who think that expansion is the right thing to do have to continue making not only the case from a equity point of view, but also an economic one, right? Like, it makes sense for a state who wants to support its providers to make sure that people can get the health care that they need, so that the providers, the health plans, all of the system can support what really is necessary for people to have, and really not only for people to have the care that they need, but for the country to be safe, for us to be able to, when we have a pandemic, to be able to make sure that people can get access to vaccines, get access to treatments, all of the things that people need to live a healthy life.
All right. So as long as we're talking about Texas, Ken Yonda, former CEO of ACAP plan in Texas, one of the barriers we actually face in Texas is the hospitals. So it's interesting, and none of the hospitals would actually say that, but because the hospitals have been very successful at financing directed payment programs and things to make up for their uncompensated care, and hoping that there's some potential for there to be some revised guidance from you guys about some of the interesting financing mechanisms that go on in Texas and in other states with funding DISH and funding some of these supplemental programs. Anything that you can say about that?
Just to say that, you know, we continue to make sure that states are following the rules that we have set forward. We've put out guidance about how provider taxes should be funded, and we'll continue to look at making sure that states are in compliance with that.
I know that equity is one of the big issues that's dear to your heart. Can you just summarize for us some of the accomplishments or the things you're still working on that we should be focused on as well?
Sure. Thank you, of course, for the question. I think one of the biggest things has been really focusing the agency that no matter what issue we are addressing, to really make sure we are asking these questions about how are our policies affecting the underserved. And I think we've been able to really think differently in the last couple of years. We just put out more of our accomplishments. We had a huge equity conference last week, which was really wonderful, just the level of engagement. There are particular places where I think I personally just feel so invested in. One has been maternal health. That is, of course, been a administration-wide, really from the vice president down, of making sure all of us are focused on using our levers. Medicaid is, of course, the primary lever that we have. Making sure that women have postpartum coverage is so important, and this week we hit 35 states, and we continue to have more and more states coming in, but it's broader than coverage. We have so much more to do, and we've been able to use the Medicare lever of making sure that we're asking the right questions from hospitals, our birthing-friendly designation, and really thinking about the Innovation Center and encouraging models around maternal health. That's been one area of deep focus, but it really pervades all of the work we're doing to make sure that we are having the lens of how are our decisions affecting not only the underserved, but the providers, the health plans, et cetera, that actually provide care for the underserved, because both need to be linked, in my mind, to make sure we move the needle on health equity.
LACAP is doing that in a smaller way, but we are funding four separate medical school scholarships for people interested in addressing Black maternal health. So last year it was two people got it, and this year it's four, so we're thrilled about that. So that's one of our contributions to it. We so appreciate your taking the time here, and thank you again.
Since this recording, the Biden administration has released their proposed short-term limited-duration health insurance regulation. You can learn more about it via the link in this episode's description. Don't miss an episode. Find and subscribe to the ACAP Coffee Break wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our friends at Claris Health for their support of the ACAP Coffee Break, and thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time.